the Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Anybody that has boys and girls knows this. The girls usually start talking somewhere around, I don't know, 2 months, 2.5 months out of the womb. Boys usually start talking somewhere around third or fourth year of their marriage. So there's a difference here in verbal skills. And this is not a sexist thing to say. This is accurate. I saw a study, and it said that women have better verbal skills than men. I felt like saying to the authors of that study, This is Dr. Ray, and doing my very best here on The Doctor Is In to have female-like verbal skills. This is tough. The overlapping continuums. The least wordy woman may be naturally more expressive and able to share feelings and emote than sometimes the most wordy guy. But I'm going to do my very best. The number to get onto the program, if I can get this computer to act right. There we go. I took my computer into the guy, I don't know, to get it fixed, you know. That's a 4-year-old computer. And he looked at me as if I had just brought in a musket. So in 2 years, I went from cutting-edge technology to Amish. Nonetheless, I think I got it up and running here. The number to get onto the program, and you will get to speak to Keith, our brand-new call screamer. I said, I don't get it. Why do we have to have 3 call screamers over there when I get about 1 call every 4 shows? Apparently, though, they said they wanted to get Keith to get his experience when there isn't a whole lot of pressure to answer a whole lot of calls. 877-573-7825 if you want to talk to Keith or Eric. Now Andrew's third man down. He's never going to get to the phones. 877-57-EQUAL. It's a call-in program. Questions about life and people and situations and circumstances. I am a psychologist. That's what I do for a living. I've been doing that for a living. I don't want to say how long. I'm talking single-digit numbers, but that's decades single-digit numbers, not digits. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get on to the program. Just maybe an announcement here. Hold on, let me pull this thing up. Good Lord permitting, this Friday, for those of you down in the Sacred Heart radio listening area, even St. Gabriel Radio in Columbus, I'm heading over to Wilmington, Ohio. Down over there, kind of in the southwest area of the state, the quadrant, St. Columbkill. It's a men's conference. Go to my website, drray.com, if you're interested. Number is there. I have often reiterated the theme here in my presentations and books that part of the problem with so many ideas now running interpersonal relationships, now running morality, now influencing parenting, come from ideas that at the core, at the very base of human understanding, are incorrect. They're misguided. About 20 years ago, maybe more, maybe it's 30 years ago now. I mean, you're as old as I am. It all starts to flow together. I mean, that when I was in kindergarten or last week, they're all kind of the same. There was a horrid, I mean, this was high-profile national news of a preschool program that supposedly ritually, horridly, satanically abused these little preschoolers. And I think the director of the program and as well as some of the administrative staff went to prison. And these little kids were all telling the same kinds of stories. The awful stuff that occurred to them at the hands of these folks. Across the board stuff. Really awful. And at the time, and this is still an awful lot of the mindset out there. Little kids don't lie. Not about stuff like that. Not about being victims, not about being abused. They don't lie. Well, with that philosophy in mind, these kids were interviewed. And of course, if they're not going to lie, that means you don't seek evidence for what the truth might be. You assume that the kids are telling the truth, and you just seek specifics. And the kids were all too easily obliged to tell. And they didn't do it deliberately. Little kids get influenced. That's the way it is. Well, as I was moving through my young shrinkhood, when I was a shrinkling, relentlessly, I oftentimes had to explore prospective abuse cases, situations where a child was referred for therapy, or the parents were referred for therapy, because there was an accusation of some kind of abuse. The dominant theory was children don't lie. That's it. If they're telling you that something horrific like this happened to them, then it did. This is part of the overall premise among a lot of professionals, the bulk of professionals, that children are basically cooperative. They're basically honest. They basically want to please. They want to do what is right and good. And therefore, they really don't need much in the way of firm discipline. They need guidance and facilitation because all they really want to do is get along. If you start out with a premise like that, you're going to come up with all kinds of ideas that follow from it that don't work. One of these, of course, is that children don't lie. Not about these serious things. Now, I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. Because there are going to be people invariably who will email me and say, Dr. Ray, I just want to tell you I was a child and nobody believed me because I said what was happening and finally it came to light, but nobody believed me. I understand this, and that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying to begin with the premise that under all circumstances, no matter what a kid says about an adult seriously mistreating that child, it is the truth. I have had children, parents, in my office. Children made the accusations. The parents were the accused. Turned out not at all to be true. Dr. Ray, how do you know that? Because the children basically recanted and gave all kinds of logic and reason for their accusations. And their recanting was a lot more believable than their accusations. So, given all that, yes, when a child makes an accusation, it has to be explored. It has to be followed up. Absolutely. There's no question. Children are vulnerable that way. They have to be protected. But to move into the premise that no matter what, no matter where the evidence leads, no matter how unlikely it would have been that this could have happened, the child is to be believed, so it must have happened. Overwhelmingly, child development understanding, the research, common sense, human history says that children will lie. I've seen adolescents accuse their parents of horrific things. Terrible things. Why? Because it's a club. They know this is the nuclear weapon in their arsenal. And if for whatever the reason, the relationship between the parent and the kid is not all that good, and the kid is thwarted in something, or the kid wants retaliation, this is a big one. Typically, they go to the school, or perhaps a therapist, and they say, well, this is what happened. And we are obliged to look into it, of course. You can't just simply say, I don't believe you, forget it, you're lying. You can't do that. My point is, children never lie about certain topics. Well, let me put it to you this way. Ever so recently, that notion guided some very high political happenings. And the point was that not only do children never lie, but adults can never be mistaken. Adults can never, ever not recall correctly the truth simply because the accusation is so serious. Got to be real, real careful about that. I know there are innocent people listening to me right now who have been accused. I know it. I'm Dr. Ray.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
Dr. Ray. Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This Easter, from 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment comes Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. When Joy Smith's son John falls through an icy Missouri lake, all hope seems lost. But a mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible.
Please, God, send your Holy Spirit to save my son.
Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. In theaters Wednesday, April 17th. Tickets and showtimes available at BreakthroughMovie.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Are you fed up with the current healthcare system, paying too much for your healthcare cost? Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Best yet, Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. Visit SolidarityHealthShare.org to join like-minded Catholics in sharing medical expenses.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. I got into this bad habit of imitating different animals, you know, around my house. My wife's getting a little upset at me, and I'm doing my dog imitation and all that. I was impersonating a flamingo, and she told me to quit. I didn't agree with her, so I had to put my foot down. Let's see. Mary Beth from Ohio. Mary Beth, do you have your pencil out? Do you have your pencil and paper out right now? You never know what could
it's
come
pen.
Out of my mouth that is noteworthy.
Are you making fun of me?
Yes, of course.
Well, I have a routine of going to 12:05 Mass at St. Mary's Church, the Basilica, and then I rush to my car and turn the radio on and listen to your show. And I do have a notebook and pen, not pencil, and I do take notes. But I wanted to, first of all, at the risk of changing you, number one, I want to compliment you. You have been in the zone ever since January 1st. So I'm not sure what's happened, if you've had kids move out, if you're on vitamins.
Wait, okay.
I don't know.
Well, Mary Beth, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I got two questions. One, you don't leave Mass early, do you?
No way.
Okay. All right. But never, two, if I'm in the zone after January 1, was I not in the zone before?
Well, I would have to say you've always been in the zone. I've met you in person. And in fact, you counseled my husband and myself for 2 hours because we drove all the way from Marietta to Canton area. And see, I guess I'm not memorable, so maybe you're not in the zone.
No, I can't say anything. I am obliged by confidentiality to say nothing.
Now I understand. But I thought you could always agree. But remember Marietta. That was one of my favorite statements that you mentioned.
When we lost a big lead in a tournament.
I know. Never rest on your laurels. But I wanted to share something that worked for my husband and me. It was my idea originally. But you know how knowledge is power. Well, we now have three kids. They're doing great. They're 29, 27, and 25. But the struggle of raising them against the current society has not really got our back. But I came up with something once. I was praying, actually, real quick. And I just said, how is it that I can get information about what's going on and scare the kids without divulging that they are telling on each other? So I came up with something where one of the kids told me what was going on, and I just said to the one who did get in trouble or was about to, I said, well, I heard it through the mom network. So not only did it save the relationship between the two kids, it also made them have an audience. So they didn't get in a lot of trouble if the mom was around. It just really helped a lot.
Well, you know they can't trace where you got the information because so many kids just publicize everything they do on Instagram or Snapface or whatever that thing is. And so
well,
as a result...
back in the day. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
But I still think Mom Network is appropriate because, you know, our kids are surrounded by some moms from time to time, and then you don't have to divulge where you heard something from. I guess you could even say Mom Network, even if you saw it online, that would protect the person who put it out there. But anyways, it helped us dodge a lot of bullets.
I just want you to know, Mary Beth, while you were talking, I took notes.
Oh my gosh, did that make us equals?
Yes.
Well,
how precious. Well, thank you for a very, very sweet call, and someday I hope to see you again down that way.
Oh, you will. I wrote down November 5th is your taping, right?
That was back the last November 5th.
Oh,
you missed it by 2 months. You're thinking next November 5th. You're thinking next November 5th. They had to run a rerun over the holidays, and Andrew picked that one, and I'm pleading for audience members and said it was November 5th and 6th where we already taped it. And don't think I didn't notice you weren't there, just as an aside.
Well, I just heard that on the radio the other day, so is that old info?
Yes.
It shouldn't
yes.
be?
They run
oh.
least worst.
Well,
I have no best of. They run least worst.
That's what I was going to get back to, the least worst. I keep that. And then I kind of liked it when you were doing all the Valley Girl like this and like that. Well, thank you for all you do.
You're
I really
welcome, dear.
It.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You're welcome, honey. We've got an anonymous mom. Again, it's a second call from Ohio. Ohio's kind of spinning out of control here. 15-year-old son has been vaping marijuana. I don't know if she found this out through the Mom Network. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
How'd you find out?
My son, my other son, found the thing in the basement, the pen thing.
Mm. Did you confront him? Did you confront him yet?
Oh yeah, I wrote a couple notes real quick so I could like kind of spit it out. So we've talked to him. He's almost unapologetic. Like I think
I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, he thinks it's fun, and he thinks it's a better alternative to alcohol because you're not going to, like, beat somebody up or throw up.
Yeah, it's a better alternative to cocaine, too. Tell him it's a better alternative to cocaine or opioids.
Yeah, and he has fun with his friends and whatever.
This is the old it's not as bad as.
Yeah, and
therefore it's okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm concerned because it was like, okay, it was like, he experimented with getting drunk. That didn't work out so well for him. Now he's trying this, and I'm just kind of like, I don't know how to police this. These kids come over. You can't smell this because there's no odor. You know, they put some little thing in there, and it vapes, and you don't smell anything. So they can be doing it right under your nose. Then, you know, how do I police him, and how do I go forward? Then do I tell other parents that I know that their kid was doing it with him?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, like, and then regarding, like, his phone, I'm kind of a snooper. I snoop in the room. I snoop on their phone. You know, if I do that, it's like, well, you're violating my privacy. Can I read the text? And then I feel like I did something wrong. Like, why is he doing this? And how do I go forward? Like, do I have to frisk these kids every time they come in my house? Because if they don't, they know they can't do it in my house. If he wants to do it, he's going to go somewhere else and do it. So I'm kind of like, I'm pretty upset about it because I just don't know why he's doing this. And I don't know if I can make him stop it.
Well, let me ask you a question. Now, forgive me for saying that. That's a dumb. Let me ask you a question. I can't believe how many national network news people say that. Let me ask you this. That's just a meaningless thing to say. Sorry about that. Forgive me.
Oh.
Is your son, in your opinion, your assessment, trustworthy?
Mm-hmm. I guess not.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, he'll say what he has to do to get what he wants. But interestingly enough, if you confront him like we did, he's brutally honest. He will tell you exactly what he thinks, but he will manipulate situations if he can do that to get what he needs. So he's kind of like, kind of has two sides. But if you sit and talk with him where some kids would lie, he'll just answer your questions really directly.
Here's what I mean about, is your son trustworthy? I don't mean, is he 50% trustworthy? I don't mean, is he sometimes trustworthy and sometimes not trustworthy? Mm-hmm. Trustworthy means, okay, good for you, dear. That's the answer I was looking for.
No, he's not.
Because that will guide your motherhood. Because he has shown you that he cannot be trusted with who he hangs with his cell phone, downstairs in the basement with his buddies. He can't be trusted. Not only can he not be trusted, but he has told you, I don't see anything wrong with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm going to try to do it, and however you police me, I'll figure out ways to get around you. And that's really the message, it sounds to me, like he said.
Yeah, he didn't come out, but, you know, we have another, you know, part two tonight. But that was the first part, was just kind of getting in, you know, just kind of like, why are you doing this? And
Mom, your situation is tragically common. Tragically common. I see it over and over and over again among good families who are trying hard to raise good kids, exposing them to the faith, morals. Yep. The kids are pulled by the culture, what it offers, in the way of entertainment, in the way of drugs, in the way of everything. And so many of them do what your son does.
Yeah.
Sometimes worse, sometimes less. It puts the parent in a position to have to say, well, now I got to keep a hawkeye on this kid. I can't let him go anywhere with his buddies. I can't. The cell phone's gone. He can't have a cell phone. This is how he plans everything. This is how he does things on the phone that I would be shocked by, which I think you would be.
Yeah.
So all of this is now a reassessment on your part as a parent to say, what kind of freedom can I let this young man have on this? Because he has now shown me Well, you might be right about that, Mom. You truly might be right about that. That's the corner he has painted you into.
The word apologetics has a bad reputation, doesn't it? It sounds either like you're apologizing for being Catholic or you're defending the indefensible, like an apologist for big oil or an apologist for big pharma. The Greek root of the word means summary or explanation. And the classic line is 1 Peter 3:15, always have a ready reason for those who ask you of the hope that's in you. Here's what it's not. Apologetics is not being a debate champion, arguing, needing to be right, or the cause of conversion. It's none of those things. In my one-night parish mission called Ignite, I teach about the difference between apologetics, which is like defense, and evangelization, which is like offense. It's all about making disciples, not arguments, to defeating the other guy in the debate. This is Patrick Coffin at patrickcoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
a
priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Traveling for spring break? You don't have to miss your favorite Ave Maria program. Bookmark AveMariaRadio.net or download the Ave Maria Radio app on your smart device. You can listen to more than a dozen live or recorded Ave Maria radio shows wherever and whenever you want. On the road, in the line at the amusement park, at the beach, or in the evening after a productive day. Stay connected. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I run things at my house, you know that? Vacuum cleaner, dishwasher, garbage disposal, lawnmower. Yeah, more and more things I'm running. Cindy from North Dakota, a generic question. I hope I am not impoverished enough to give a decent enough linguistic elucidation. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Now, this part where you talk.
Dr. Ray, I have a question about poverty. How is that concept carried out day to day in a very plentiful culture? How are we to live?
There was a book out some time ago, 20, 25 years ago, I read. It was called Margins. The premise of the book was that most people, Christians included, live all the way to the very limit or above of finance, time, sometimes spirituality. If I make more money, I'm going to spend more money on me. I'm going to buy a nicer car, bigger house, more vacations. As a result, what I have to help with poverty or people in need is a lot less, a lot less. I think there's two basic lines to your question, Cindy. One is, what is now called poverty in the United States in human history has been unbelievable wealth. Some statistics, if I recall them correctly. The average person below the poverty line in the U.S. lives in twice the square footage of the average Japanese. Twice the square footage of the average European. Four times the square footage of the average Japanese and eight times the square footage of the average Russian. Below our poverty line. Approximately half of the people below our poverty line have whole house air conditioning, more than one television, a computer, cell phones, typically two cars, and half of them have their own home, or at least paying on it. Now, this is not to say they may not be in need, but for me, I typically, if I'm going to give, I'm going to select those organizations, those agencies, those seminaries that I think that I want to give to. Okay. By and large, I sometimes gravitate toward overseas missionary work. My wife went to Tanzania a couple of weeks, and what they live in, nobody almost in the U.S. would live in, except somebody perhaps living on the streets. So I guess what I would say, Cindy, is our definition of poverty in world history terms, or even in world terms right now, is somewhat of an artificial definition. To give as Christians, I am absolutely convinced we don't give anywhere near enough. Not even remotely close do we give enough. Because oftentimes we want to live the way we want to live. I'll share with you this. When I was growing up, I think the way I lived was considered middle class. It would now be considered poverty. We had one used car. We had, my dad didn't make a whole lot. We had a home that is smaller than the average home today, or the average home that somebody below the poverty line lives in. We did not have air conditioning. We couldn't afford it. We had, of course, one phone, which is a rotary dial phone that cost $6 a month, and you made no long-distance calls. So I guess in my overall philosophical rant here, the idea of poverty just keeps moving up. And that makes it imperative, incumbent upon us Christians, really to decide wisely where our gifts and our giving will be most helpful. That's where I'm at with that, you know.
Okay.
So, thanks, Cindy.
Great. Well, thank you.
All righty.
Okay.
You get in trouble when you say things like that, because when Lyndon Johnson started his war on poverty back in 1964, since then they've spent multiple trillions of dollars attempting to alleviate poverty. And if you look at the statistics, I think it's something like 14% of the U.S. population now is considered living below the poverty line. But the poverty line is somebody's idea. It's not somebody, it's somebody's, a bunch. Their idea of what constitutes poverty, lower level of economic living in the U.S., according to overall U.S. standards. It's an artificial line is what it is. Now, here's one thing I will say, and this is the one thing I could probably get in trouble for, and I'll get back to your calls. When my grandfather and grandmother came from Italy, they were truly poor. Truly. But they lived richly. By that I mean they were moral people. They obeyed the law. Drugs were something not even remotely in their world. Unfortunately, what is happening now is that there is a certain amount of spiritual poverty, behavioral poverty, that leads to economic poverty. If someone doesn't live their lives well, you can almost be certain that they're going to struggle not to be poor. And the question has to be asked, like in our Lord's time, there were people who were poor, and there were a lot of them. Half to two-thirds didn't know where the next meal was coming from in Palestine. There were a lot of them. But it wasn't because they led their lives poorly. It was because of a lack of resources. Now the resources are by and large there for most people in the U.S. But because of growing spiritual behavioral poverty, it spills over into economic poverty. I talked on a lot. There were a lot of people waiting patiently on the phone. 877-573-7825 is the number. I'm Dr. Rick.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God. But I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have. And we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence. And in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
There is genuine consolation from the Catholic Catechism regarding the death of a loved one. The Christian who dies in Christ Jesus, we are told, is away from the body and at home with the Lord. Death marks the end of a Christian's sacramental life, but the fulfillment of his new birth, which began at baptism, now has a definitive conformity to the image of Jesus Christ. The Christian funeral does not give the deceased a sacrament or sacramentals because he or she has passed beyond the sacramental economy. The different funeral rites express the paschal character of Christian death. The greatest consolation to the Christian is the knowledge that even in death, we are separated only temporarily, that one day, if we have lived well, we will all be together again in Christ. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
Who's one?
Teresa.
What? I don't even think she's 100% Italian. Sometimes I'm caught up in my own conflicting rules. There are people who are waiting patiently on the phone. But one of my overarching rules is if you disagree with me, no matter when you call, you go to the front of the line. So I thank the folks for their patience waiting. But Peter disagrees with me. And not only that, does he disagrees with me in a way that an awful lot of people would think. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Thanks for the call there. Tell me where I went wrong talking to a previous caller about her son's cell phone as well as his other levels of trustworthy questioning.
Well, thank you for taking my call again. I appreciate everything you do and enjoy listening to your show. I don't necessarily think you went wrong. I'm asking, what then do we do after possibly taking away the cell phone or limiting other privileges to show that certain amount of trust has been lost? How do we rebuild that relationship? How do we fill up our child with what they need to be equipped with to go out into the world as adults and face the same pressures with the same opportunities to rebel and do things that are not good for them?
That
Get them
that
to
is
a place where they can make good decisions.
The first part of your question is one that I get all the time. It's one that I have to work a lot of parents through in therapy, and it's one that I've dealt with multiple times in several books, which is, if you do these things, if you take the cell phone away or you limit their freedoms or you become much more vigilant about who they're with, what happens to the relationship? How angry can the kid get? How resentful can the kid get? Can he become sneaky and defiant? Can he get to the point where he says, I can't wait till I get out of your sight because I'm going to rebel against everything you tried to stop me from doing? Am I phrasing that correctly there, Peter?
Sure. I think something that underlies my thinking, something my wife told me a while ago, she was quoting Lincoln, and I apologize if I misquote this, but that it was his privilege that his children are free from parental tyranny because it is love, because love is the chain that binds a child to its parents. So how do we model the necessary love to fill up our children so that they're not as easily subjected to the type of pressures from their peers? Because I had friends growing up who wanted me to do things, and I remember not, for whatever reason, not having a hard time saying no. I still would hang out, but I wouldn't do the things.
Peter, I'm going to say something.
Other than the fact that I felt loved.
Well, yes, that's a big part of it. I mean, you're raising a ton of very complex questions here. I'm going to do my very best to kind of bullet point a few ideas. Well, first of all, I would suspect that you were the kind of kid that, by and large, had a temperamental bent toward maturity, toward wanting to be loved by your parents and wanting to not displease them. So there was a certain personality aspect to who you were that made you like that. Abraham Lincoln was talking in 1850-something about love, and he was in a culture that was a fraction of the moral danger that our culture is. A fraction, not even close. So what happens now with kids is when parents describe kids who are getting wayward, 14, 15, 16, 18 years of age, oftentimes their behavior is dangerous. It's morally dangerous. It is physically dangerous. Drugs, alcohol, possible suicide. It's just very dangerous stuff. And first and foremost, the parent has to do their best to supervise and stop it. You can't just say, well, I'm going to wait till all my love kicks in so this kid will stop doing this on his own. Because I've seen the most loving parents in the whole world have kids go off the rails. It happens all the time. So if you say, well, how do we show them the love while at the same time having to now restrict and supervise because they've headed off in directions that shock us? Love is shown in an awful lot of ways. I'll sit and talk with you. I'll hug you. I'll kiss you. I will take care of you. I will do everything I can for you. But I cannot let you hurt yourself. And if you hate me for that, then I have to live with that. I have to. I have no option. You know, I had 10 kids, Peter, and many of my children had very, very bad histories. They are all adopted. Some of them heavy drug exposure in the womb. There was brain damage. So as a result, they didn't absorb our parenting like a healthy brain might have allowed them to absorb it. So I did my very best with my wife to love, to hold, to be affectionate, to kiss, to talk, to share, to supervise. But yet at the same time, I did not allow them to have things that would have hurt them. Many of them didn't get cell phones until they were 16, 17, 18 years old. I couldn't trust them. There's no way I could trust them. Some of them didn't drive till they were 18. Why? I didn't want a car underneath them. So on one hand, love is shown in all kinds of ways. A parent cannot be afraid of saying, what I have found out you've been doing, I have to stop and protect you, because if I don't, the costs are too high. You got a kid in the previous caller, he's vaping. He's not only vaping, but he's vaping marijuana, which, again, this is trouble. I've seen a lot of kids go off the edge psychologically because of this stuff. That's dangerous stuff. The kid's attitude is, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't even regret what I did, Mom. Thirdly, don't you dare look at my phone. That's my private world. You look at my phone, I'm going to be ticked. Well, obviously, he's got all kinds of stuff on there he doesn't want her to see. So he's given her all kinds of signs that I am embarking upon some very serious, self-destructive kinds of behaviors. And she's got to stop him. And every other way that she can show love is fine, but she's got to stop him. And my guess is he's going to be so angry and so resentful toward her that you're absolutely right, Peter. I think the relationship will take some real damage. But we hope that in time he comes to understand that his mom and his dad are doing what's good for him. None of my children are alienated from me. None of them. But I had to take stands that, by according to cultural standards, I was way out of line. Way out of line. And they knew it. They looked around and said, whoa, I don't have a fraction of the freedom that guy has. And there was resentment for some of them at the time. But I think...
No, thank you, Doctor. You make a lot of great points. And I don't disagree with many of the things you're saying. I guess I feel it's still incumbent on us as parents to find ways to introduce more responsibility back into their lives and allow them to feel trust to try to mend that relationship.
But you let that rope out very slowly. Slowly, that's right.
Yes.
Absolutely slowly. Yes. Good stuff, Peter. Thank you. Now, see, that is the ideal call, because initially Peter got to the front of the line because it sounded like he was questioning. He wasn't maybe disagreeing, but he was questioning. But by the end of the call, I had won him over, maybe. Okay, for those of you waiting patiently, stay right there. I'm coming right to you, God willing, as soon as I get back. I'm Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere.
The EWTN home video highlight for April is My Life with Mother Angelica. Relive precious moments on a very special bookmark at Our Lady of the Angels Monastery as Sister Mary Agnes and Doug Keck discuss My Life with Mother Angelica by Sister Mary Raphael. Order your DVD and companion book at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Never trust an atom. They make up everything. Dr. Ray Guarendi. Let's get to it really quick. Helene from Ohio. By all the Ohio listeners, the whole state is shrinking. Hi, Helene.
Dr. Ray, I just found out on Sunday my 22-year-old daughter is pregnant out of wedlock, and I don't know the avenue to take. Where to go from here?
Does she want to keep the baby?
We haven't gotten that far. It's just Sunday. The father of the child is 25, and she's 22, And we have, I told her the options you have are adoption or if you, after a lot of prayer and discernment, soul searching, that you could marry possibly, but I don't know if that's a good idea. She herself is adopted, but she was adopted at 5 months, and I've never used that as any excuse or reason for any behavior. But I just don't know the steps in which to take now. At 22 years of age, she is older, you know.
Are there steps for you to take? Helene, are there steps for you to take?
Well, she's willing to listen to us. She does feel a lot of remorse, okay, because we've raised her to be a good Catholic. And she has siblings that, you know, that we're all practicing and everything. And I ultimately told her it is a decision that the two of them have to make, right? But I don't know how to guide them, right? Because they are adult ages, right? They're 22 and 25.
A lot of how you will guide them, Helene, is how she seeks you out. If you say to her, you sit down sometime in the near future and say, okay, dear daughter, where do you want to go from here with this child? And obviously you're going to refer to it as a child so that she doesn't get the idea that, well, I could solve my problem here really quickly, especially since my boyfriend wants me to, which could be a possibility. So I would start out by asking her, I hope that abortion is not an option here, that you don't want to kill the baby.
She doesn't.
Okay, good. That's a first huge step. And you could tell her, okay, honey, let's see where we go from here. It isn't the end of the world. It's okay. Going to be a little baby here, and we have to decide what direction you want to go. One, of course, there's a lot of loving parents out there that would give this baby a beautiful home and family, if that's a direction you wish to go. Her age group is notorious for not placing babies for adoption. Like one out of 100 places a baby for adoption. And their mindset is, oh, I could never, ever do that. I could never be that irresponsible. I wouldn't know where my baby is. That's awful and terrible. That's now become a reigning mindset among that group. Hopefully.
She herself was adopted.
Okay, good. And she knows how much she was loved by you and your husband, correct?
Right. Oh, yes, yes.
Sure. So you could certainly use that. You could say, look how we loved you.
Oh, that's true.
What makes you think that the parents of this baby would not love this little one like we loved you? Okay, so that's the first thing. If she says, no, Mom, no way, no how, I'm keeping this child, and I don't know if my boyfriend's going to be around, if he's going to help me, what he's going to do, what he's promising, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let her know. First of all, you let her know that she's not the black sheep of the family. That's probably what she's going to be tempted to think. You know, look at all my other brothers and sisters. They're all cool. They're all successful. They're all faithful. They've got wonderful families, or else they're educated. Look at me. I'm the black sheep. No, you're not, sweetheart. Not at all. This doesn't make you a black sheep at all. Let's see what we're going to do here from this point forward. This doesn't change anything other than we have another little life that we have to think about. You know, we don't go pressing any panic buttons here. You know the irony, Helene? Of the 18 to 34-year-old age group, more of them are living together than are married, and more of the children are born out of wedlock than in wedlock.
Right.
That's the norm of that age group now. So it's not the end of the world, dear. It is not. I have a grandchild out of wedlock, and we love that little guy. And however we have to show him love, and his parents, we do.
Okay. But do you, like, I don't want it to become a situation where she is working and I'm having this child 8 hours a day, or it's in daycare. You know,
well, that's a good point, and we've said that too. we're not watching. This is, right. No, we're too old for this. We're not going a second go around. Yeah, that's, right. You may say that, you know, honey, I can watch this child one day a week, but that's it. That's my limit. So that's not one of our options.
Okay. Now, sure. How about, do you think marriage can be a possibility there? Or is it,
well,
just because
I don't know. Yeah, you got to know the context of the relationship. You got to know how close they are. You got to know why they haven't gotten married up to this point. You got to know the character of the guy. All of that is part of the picture. And sometimes marriage would be a mistake on top of the situation. And sometimes it's a natural course. This is Dr. Ray. I got to run. Thank you so much for joining me. Walk with God. Hold your children tightly by the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.